Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. Through this program, we want to also be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and always feel free to be in touch with us at genesis123.co. Stay tuned until the end, where we're always offering a really exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. One of the most special places to me in Israel, 21 years of living here, is Sderot. I've been going to Sderot and taking visitors, mostly tourists, to visit Sderot for, easily 15, maybe most of the 20 years or more that I'm living here in Israel. Sderot's a beautiful little city that's seen huge growth, which is a tremendous paradox, considering where Sderot is and the things that have and continue sometimes to take place there, because Sderot is the city that's in Israel, not just closest to, but directly on the Gaza border. The western side of Sderot is less than 1 kilometer from the Gaza border. And as a result, there are special needs, social issues there. But basically, it's a beautiful small city with about 35,000 people. The mayor and deputy mayor I've gotten to know, their leadership is great. They really care and want to be sure that their city thrives and all the populations. But like everywhere in the world, and I do mean everywhere, there are at-risk groups. Not everyone can get along. Not everyone has the social, economic, or psychological wherewithal to do the best for themselves or for their children. And so one of the projects that we from the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation have been privileged to connect to, and thanks to the support of so many donors from all over the world, provide our financial support for several years, maybe more than several, is a wonderful program representing one of Sderot's largest overall nonprofits called Re'ut Sderot. And that, and they do many things, and we're going to talk about that today. But the project with which we have been most closely associated is a project for at-risk youth, people who are classified by the social services in Israel at having special needs. I don't mean special developmental needs, but coming from homes whose parents may love them tremendously, but they don't have the wherewithal to care for them the way we all do. And sadly, while there are many parenting books that you can buy in a bookstore or online about how to be the best parent, there's not a handbook that you're given when you have your children to be that best parent. And not everyone has the same skills and capabilities. And everyone else brings along their personal strengths and often weaknesses. So we've been really privileged. And last week, I had the privilege, it'd been a while. And when I don't go to Sderot for a while, I feel like I'm missing something. I had the privilege of going down to Sderot. It's about an hour, 15, hour and 20 minute drive from my home, and visiting with some of the kids and the staff who work with the kids, and hearing about other needs, especially now in the wake of the war that we just experienced with Iran. So today, I am very, very pleased to have my good friend, Hila Malka, who is the partnership manager for Re'ut Sderot, who I got to visit last week, who I think, last fall or so, you were just getting ready to have a baby. We met and we hosted one of the groups down in Sderot together, bringing people around to see firsthand. And we should mention also that Sderot, unfortunately, on October 7th of 23, was the site of one of the most horrific battles, where more than 50 people were killed by Hamas terrorists. And
I'll correct you to 70.
70 people. Well, I said more than 50. I didn't realize it was 50. It's more than 70. Okay, 70 people. Thank you for that. It's a tremendous amount, and it's a small city. And Hadar, I'm sorry. You know what? I forgot to ask you your last name.
Urim.
Hadar Urim, who is a Bat Shirut. And what that means is she's doing her national service in place of, or sometimes in addition to, compulsory military service, working with the kids who are in the Sderut programs. Hadar has a day-to-day, hands-on-the-pulse, intimate relationship with so many of the kids. And I wanted just to expand upon what's going on now. Who are the kids? What are the needs in general? And what are we seeing, especially how it's affecting, and I don't want to overplay it, but arguably these children are among Israel's most vulnerable. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we, from Genesis 1, 2, 3, maintain as much partnership and provide as much funding as possible, because they're our future. So Hila, and it was a long introduction. It's because of how passionate I am about this. Hila and Hadar, I want to welcome you and thank you for taking your time today to join Inspiration from Zion.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start, if we can, maybe just from a big picture. I gave a little bit of allusion to it. I know Re'ut Sderot does many, many different things. One of the largest nonprofit organizations, not just entrusted, but empowered by the municipality of Sderot to take care of so many needs inside the city. But what are we speaking about specifically when we're talking about the at-risk youth and then perhaps the projects that you do for them?
So one of our projects in Re'ut Sderot is really the after-school clubs for the youth at risk. We're talking about almost 100 kids from first to sixth grade spread out in six different clubs. They come every single day after school and they get two hot meals. Staff that loves them and cares for them, supports them. They get therapy, help with homework, really all their needs, so that they can go home stronger and feeling much better. These are kids who come from very difficult backgrounds. If it's really, it's there's so many different
after school. Yeah. No, I'm saying that the homes that pretty difficult for them to be there after school for so many hours.
So yeah. Why? What are the three things that are difficult? Is it because they don't have a TV to watch? What's difficult? Three things, that examples of the difficulties.
Well, sometimes it's just the way the parents treat them. It could be fighting, a lot of fighting. It could be
violence in the home.
Violence. And just overall, haznacha, I'm how to say it.
Haznacha in English.
Right. Like parents also have economical problems. They cannot support their children. They can't get them what they need.
Basic meals and just overall like parenting. It's just not, doesn't happen as much as you see in every other home.
And something, like I said at the beginning, that many of us take for granted. I don't know that any parent is perfect, but many people are imperfect, and that's not because they're bad people necessarily. It's because they don't have the skills or they have circumstances that make it difficult, and then that impacts the children.
Yeah, and also we're talking about the children of Sderot. These children, people think that just since October 7th, you know, the children have been crazy here, but really these children we're talking about since they're born. They're living in Sderot, and they're living with sirens and with Gaza being I don't know how much in miles, but 1.5 kilometers from here, and they're hearing war all the time. They're living like that since they're born. So they're living with trauma, real trauma, and especially because they don't get the support at home. So it's just much harder. And we try to be there for them and give them the therapy they need and give them the help they need and the love they need after growing up here in Sderot like that.
Hadar, what were you going to say?
No, I'm saying that the trauma, many times it affects the parents as well.
It struck me, and it's not something that I don't already know, But when we had that lovely visit last week, Hila, and just sitting with the kids in one of the six clubs that you alluded to, talking to them, it was so nice because for me personally, the fact that we had brought our group from Root and Branch last November exactly to that place, and many of the kids were the same, and they remembered me, and they remembered the Christian families that we brought and the people who were visiting. And so we were establishing a connection, but I realized, yeah, the youngest of those in that room that day was six, and the oldest was 12. And all of them, like you said, have grown up only knowing war, and not just in the macro way that we all Israelis think about it, but it's in their backyard. And then I realized, and Hadar, you just alluded to it, that not only do their parents experience it, but rockets being fired at Israel from Gaza is not a new phenomena that began October 7th of 23. It's been going on for two decades. So probably not literally, although actually maybe you could have a 26-year-old person who grew up in Sderot and only remember and is a parent now of some of these children, and that 26-year-old parent only has memories of growing up in wartime.
Definitely, yeah.
Do you see that, Hadar, or is that made up, what I just said?
No, it's definitely true. There are stories where the kids aren't the first part of the, like, the reason they're in the Modonit. It could start...
Modonit is the club.
Yeah, the club. First with the parents.
It's okay.
It starts with the parents. It could be when they were younger that they were also at risk and in situations where they got, they were traumatized because of the situation they live in. And that affects the way they parent their kids later on. So definitely.
Hadar, you don't live in Sderot. So you're there now. Is it the end of your first year?
Yeah.
Okay. So what, I'm just curious, having spent a year there, living there, living among the people, you get to go home probably to your parents' house once every other week, something like that, for a weekend, and then for Shabbat, and then you come back. What's been the most, I'm not sure if the word is alarming, but what's the most surprising or shocking thing that you've seen and learned in this past year?
Well, in the club in particular, around the
kids in the club, in their homes.
Well, I can see it in both ways. Seeing that it's a city that went through so much for so many years, and even people around Israel, they know it. Even if you don't live in Sderot, you know the situation. And I think in both ways, I think on one hand, there is the fact that even though the city went through so much, the people here are still amazing, and it's still growing, and it's like some sort of optimism. But also on the other hand, it's the way that this such a small city has so many at-risk children for a reason. So the effects of living in such a city in a war, it's not just, it's also for the good, for like, where you see that these people are going through so much, but still coming out stronger, and the city is amazing, and the people here are amazing. But also the effects of it, I see it with my kids and with their parents. It's so difficult to see that these people are traumatized. They don't have trust in anything or anyone. And yeah.
That I want to dig deeper on that. That's a terribly scary comment that you made. They don't have trust in anything and anyone. How do you see that, and how do you fix it? Like that must have meant last fall when you began working there, you had huge barriers to overcome just to connect with the kids.
Yeah. These kids are very used to people leaving, which is also something that's very hard working as a bat shirut, because you know you only come for a year. And even though the kids know it too, because they're used to it, it's still very hard. And it takes them a long time to connect. They don't have trust in anyone. They don't... How do I say this? Yeah. They're used to people not being around as for their needs as much as they want. Kids need people with them kids need parents. Pretty much that's what it is. Parents are with their kids at every given moment, and they're there for every need. And these kids, they don't always have that. And they go from school to a club. They're never home. Something that's very not stable, unstable. So making connections with, especially with adults, is very difficult for them. But that's where I also see that the Bachirut, because she's a bit younger and she's very close to with them and she plays with them and she talks to them, it could be a little bit easier, but you can really see that there's exactly what you said, that there's a barrier.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Hila. When we had that meeting, and I'm going to put the link available for people to watch the video, which you were so helpful in terms of translating between me and the kids. When I asked them, what was so hard? Because during Operation Rising Lion, when everyone in Israel was stuck at home in their bomb shelters, schools were closed, the youth clubs were closed, everything, they couldn't go out in public into big gatherings because it was considered unsafe. When we asked the kids what was the hardest, some of them said, yeah, it's boring and difficult being at home, and perhaps amplifying some of the things, Hadar, that you just said. But the other thing that they said, Hila, which was so comforting, is they missed their friends. They missed their friends.
I feel like that's all they have, most of them. The clubs, they said that we miss the staff. Some of them see the head of the clubs. It really, it's hard to say, but as a mother, I don't know if everyone knows, but every club has what's called the M-Bite, which is like a mini mother. A loving mother who cooks for them hot meals and hugs them when they need. And every single club, we put a very special woman for that job because we understand how much it's needed with these children.
Absolutely.
The club is their family.
It's their family.
It's their family and it's their second home. And for some of them, I want to say it's their first home.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com. So let me pivot a little bit. There's so many things. By the way, Hila, you got the video that I sent. It was coincidental that it was the same day, the one from our friends in Alaska.
I did. Wow. Wait, I was so amazed.
Did you see it yet?
I sent it to them, and I'll let you know what their comment is.
Amazing, because that was so nice when we were there. And I guess we can do a shameless plug. First of all, anyone who's coming to Israel, please be in touch. And let's make it a point that you come down to Sderot as well and visit and interact personally. But we had one of the most special impacts and connections this past November as part of our Root and Branch program. We brought 18 people, including a family of 8 from Alaska, the Stewarts. They won't mind me saying their name. And the Stewarts are homeschooled. And the language that they're learning, other than English, I mean, maybe they know native languages of Alaska, the Eskimo languages, I don't know. The mother does, because she grew up among them. but they're learning Hebrew. So what was so remarkable is to see six children from 6 to 16 literally jump in that afternoon and start to play with them. They were playing cards, they were playing foosball, they were dancing together. And the stewards have, from my perspective, not only pretty decent Hebrew, but even more decent Hebrew than many Jews in the diaspora. And it was a tremendous connection. So they, as a result, were praying for all of you, and on their own initiative, made a video with all of their family and other friends, sending a blessing in Hebrew.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Which arrived the same
day. Nice.
Yeah, it was really delightful. So, okay, so here's my question. We sat and did that interview, and there was one little boy whose face just appeared to me blank, but what did I know? Maybe he was there and I never noticed him before, but I didn't know him. And everyone has different personalities. Some are more outgoing, some less so. Maybe he has having a bad day. Maybe he was tired. I don't know. And afterward, when we were done speaking, I didn't know this, but you were commenting that that wasn't even his personality, that something was really off. And we've seen that as a result of the war with Iran. Not speaking specifically about him, but what have you seen specifically in terms of maybe Hadar, you can speak to specific needs as a result of that. And Hila, maybe you can take it off afterward as to how Re'ut Sderot is specifically helping to deal with that.
Okay, so the kids, they came back from a week and a half at home, and which is crazy because the whole reason we have the clubs are so they won't go home. And it's 24/7. They stay at home with their parents and everyone's in such a craze over everything that's going on. I could say that I had a video call with one of my girls. We decided to make pancakes together just to give her like an hour so she can do something, even though it was from afar and about at home. And her mom was making the pancakes with her. And she was not calm. And you could see it. They were fighting. She was telling her all the time what she's doing is wrong. And you could see that my girl is like she couldn't have a moment for herself of quiet. I want to make pancakes. I want to have a nice moment with myself and with my bachelor. Her mom was always there. And there was so much noise around the house and such a craze over everything. And even just calling the kids. So we would speak to the parents before. And the parents, it was so hard for them having the kids at home with such a situation and running to the just really, really difficult.
I want to stop you for a second because I want to say that we were actually very worried. The staff was very, very worried during those week and a half, 2 weeks, because again, the clubs are their home, so that these kids won't go home. And when we know that they're home with their families and it's difficult families, we were actually worried that something can happen to the kids over this week and a half, 2 weeks. The parents are not calm, especially not in this kind of situation of war. So first of all, I want to say we're so happy that they're back to us because really we
know that
they have a stable place every day that they come to the club. You can continue. I just wanted to make that
definitely. The staff, we call the kids every day. We really wanted to speak to them to see how they are because we were worried about the situation. It's not easy at all. And we would visit the kids, try to make a connection with them because when they're alone and they can't even talk to us and it's some sort of the connection with us, it's very important so that we will know what the situation is, if they're happy, if they're not, if something is going on at home, it's really difficult, not being with us. And you could see that this week it wasn't easy on them because they're not used to it being at home for so long. And the parents aren't used to it either, having their kids around them for so long. You could see the effects of this.
Hila, what has Re'ut Sderot been doing specifically since then? You also, it's interesting because I know this. I remember right after, you and I didn't know each other yet then, but right after October 7th, I was simply afraid to reach out to other friends and staff there because I was terrified of getting an answer that something horrible may have had happened to them. But then for months, everyone was displaced from Stay right. Road, and that created its own. But what about right now? What's the organization?
So I was going to say, I want to take a step ahead because I think we understood that the situation is difficult. And I want to talk about what we're doing and what we're giving these kids. I see it as we have these kids for 6 years. They come from first grade to sixth grade, and then they leave. And we feel we have to give them all the tools and everything they need during these 6 years so that they can start high school on the best they can. And we give them as much as tools that we can so that they could have a fair life and a better life. So I'm going to talk for a second about therapy, because I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
That we focus, besides the hot meals and the homework and the love that they get. But really, the main thing that we give them is the therapy. And it spreads in different kind of therapies. They have art therapy. They have music therapy. Something new we started this year, and we're really hoping to continue next year, is horse riding therapy.
Right. We talked about
that. We didn't know how much success we're going to see. We actually were able to only do it for two groups. That was the donation we got. And we really, really hope we can do it for all the six groups. The other four groups that didn't have it are really, really waiting because they saw how good it was for the other groups. It's something that costs a lot, but it's something that gives the kids so much confidence. The kids at the first day of therapy and the horses, they were so scared to even go on the horse. And one of the main things that therapy does is really to give them the confidence. A kid is sitting on a horse and he's the head and he is in charge. And it's amazing. It's something the kids don't stop talking about it. They have, I think, only two more classes left and they don't want it to finish.
Right.
So that's really one of the biggest things I want to say.
And you told me, I think, when we were together last week, I think because we've looked at it from a budget perspective in things that I've tried to help raise money for, that's probably one of the biggest expenses as far as therapy. Yeah. It's like 35,000 shekels.
For every group.
For each group for one year.
Right.
12 sessions. Is it 12 sessions?
15 sessions.
15 sessions. Okay.
So, and I think it really makes such a change. I think it's one of the most important therapies that we can give them. So I wish that we'll be able to help them continue this therapy and first start with the other four groups who didn't get it this past year and have it next year.
So the immediate, just to calculate for people.
Yeah, we gave four groups. We're talking about four groups in this coming year. Horse riding therapy. We're talking about, like you said, 35,000.
Which is about $10,000.
$10,000.
Yeah.
I'll definitely send you pictures and you can share them and see the kids. It's just amazing to see the kids on the horses feeling like, I can't even explain it in words. It's really great.
We're going to do an appeal anyway, but you know, right now I just want to interject. There's a special link that we always have for this project in Sderot, and I'm going to put it here and I'm going to ask everybody, anyone who can help, $10,000 just for that alone. $10,000 gives one group 1 year of horse therapy, I was about to say it's never been more needed. Perhaps that's a true statement, or perhaps it's always needed all the same. But now that you've been able to do it
now more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. What other therapies what other therapies in general? I've seen a few, but also what is especially needed now, either in terms of enhancing that or additional things? What have you identified that, okay, now is the goal? And before you answer that, I want to say that now as we're speaking, it's summertime. And most kids in Israel are on vacation. And if their parents put them in camps, that's up to their parents. If they're traveling, that's up to their parents. But these are children who are at risk. And so therefore, what Re'ut Sderot is providing over the next 6 weeks is all additional expense.
Yes, I'm going to say again, we do not want these kids at home, especially not during summertime for 6 weeks. We know that these kids, if they're home, they could get to the street drinking alcohol and smoking. I want to say it as it is, because that's what it is if these kids are home.
elementary school you're concerned about drinking and smoking?
Yes, absolutely. It's very easy to get there, especially when their parents are doing that. So we don't want these kids at home. We're providing them the summer camps. These are all extra expenses. And I could say a few of the things we want to do during the summer camp. One of the main things we spoke about this last week is taking the children with their parents on a trip. We think it's important, first of all, for the connection between the parents and the children when we're there supervising. Because, again, at home, it's very difficult. It doesn't happen. And bringing them with us can make a very special connection between the parents and the kids. And we want the parents more involved in the work that we're doing with the children in the club. So bringing them and seeing the other parents. One of the things I spoke to you about last week is every parent is sure that they're the only ones going through such hard times and the only ones that the kids are so difficult. And once they come to this trip and see the other parents, I think I could give them so much support and they could be more involved. And maybe we could continue also for the next years, bringing them once in a while for different events or for different trips. So one of the main things really we're trying to take them, we want to take them to Jerusalem. I want to say that a lot of the kids haven't been, which is crazy. I don't think I ever heard of children in Israel.
They think it's outside of Israel.
it's the parents never took them and they never had the opportunity. So one of the main things we're trying to raise for this summer, for the summer camp, is taking the parents and the children together to Jerusalem to get to the Kotel. The Western Wall, many kids haven't been, which is, again, it's crazy for an Israeli child not to be there ever.
Sure.
We're very excited about that. We hope we'll be able to do that this summer. We're talking
and
about...
You're going to get me a budget on that, but one thing that we discussed, because I know a little bit myself, just the bus for that for a day is around 3,000 shekels, right?
Yes.
That round trip. So that alone, we can call that, I don't know, let's just round number $800 just for the bus. Just for the bus. So anyone who's following and wants to provide a bus for 40 or 50 kids and their parents to go to Jerusalem for the first time, I mean, imagine it, especially people who are listening. When you first went to Jerusalem for the first time, here's an Israeli kid who lives an hour and a half away.
And I want to say something else, which I didn't say at the beginning, which is very important for me to say. In our clubs, every child in Israel is the same. We have Jews, we have Muslims, we have Russian, Jewish, non-Jewish. It's a mix because it doesn't matter.
Right.
We're all Israeli and every kid should get the same support, the same love. So also going to the Western Wall, going to Jerusalem, it doesn't matter. We're all Israeli children and we want to give everyone this amazing opportunity.
Amazing. Wait, can I interject a second, Hadar? How you're interacting with the kids' parents, what's their sense? I mean, they know that their kids are classified as at risk. Are they appreciative of what you're doing? Is there a sense of resistance or because you're doing for their kids what they can't do? Is there any sense of shame? I'm not trying to categorize, but I'm wondering how, when you approach the parents, how you are received?
Well, it depends on the parents, but I could say from personal, I can say that I think most of the parents that I've had the opportunity to talk to them, which aren't all of them because I'm mostly with the kids and my connection with the parents is very, it's small. I don't speak to them on a regular basis, but most of the parents that I've spoken to, they know that the club is a need for their kids and they're grateful for it. I mean, there are some parents who obviously don't see it as a good thing and they get mad and they don't like the way we treat the kids or they have all kinds of, complaints. But it's only because they can see that they can feel a little bit ashamed of the fact that their kids don't get the needs at their own home.
Right.
But most of the parents that I've spoken to, they're very grateful. Sending the kids to the club, the parents need to be need to agree to it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, we can't just, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Hila. But I think that we can't just take the kids out of the house and put them in the club and the parents. It needs to be.
We need their cooperation, definitely. Yeah. And that's exactly why we're also trying to get this trip to go, because we need the parents with us. And if we don't bring them in for some activities, we're not going to have their cooperation. And it's super important for them to be part of the process, because at the end of the day, the whole thing is a process. Every day that we see the kids and we give them the help and the support and the therapy, it's a process. And at the end of the day, we need the parents as much as we can with us.
But really, parents I've spoken to, they love the staff, and they know that what we're doing is right for their kids. Because at the end of the day, most of them, they love their kids. It's not that they are doing any of this from a place of, I hate my kids, I don't want to do anything for them. It's just that they don't always have the ability to. And you can see that they are grateful for the club and the staff. Yeah. Not all of them moved.
Thank you for that. Hila, before we move on just to other needs.
Can I just say a few more words about the summer camps? The summer camps are going to be every day from 12 until 5 p.m., even I think a little later, because, again, we need the kids with us. And we want to take them to different places, and it's really all depending on the amount of money we'll be able to raise, because this is all extra expenses that we don't have.
It's outside your budget.
Year. It's the summer camp. So we really, really hope to be able to raise as much as possible. And in terms of therapy, I want to say something else. Besides the therapy we give to the groups, we're talking about, I said music and dog therapy, we didn't say, which is very, very much needed in Cerro these days. It helps the kids to feel confident. With the whole situation of sirens that they've been growing up through since they were born. Another thing we want to do in the next year is personal therapy with specific kids. I don't know if it's called therapy. Everything is really therapy. But for example, we have a few kids who play a specific instrument, and we want to give them personal classes. Again, this is all extra expenses. So if we'll be able to raise for specific kids, one girl, an 8-year-old girl in one of our clubs, she wants to play the violin. It's her biggest dream. And we wish to help her to buy her a violin, to bring her a teacher in once a week to teach her. And I'm sure that'll be, wow, I wish we could be able to do that. Talking about two other kids who play the piano, they play a little bit, but we want to help them and give them personal classes and a personal teacher throughout the year. So that's another thing we're trying to do for next year. Personal classes for specific kids who have, you know, like a little talent that they want to, nice. That we want to help them grow. And so, yeah, so the summer camps, again, they have two hot meals a day, and we're trying to raise, the more we can raise, the more we can give them.
Got it. And we have a budget that we worked on together about a year ago, for therapies and for the building, which we're going to come to. And these new things you're going to update for me. And I want to just say, anyone who is touched by this and wants to help, to please reach out, and we will earmark the dedication, your donations for these specific things, and bring an opportunity to certainly document it for you, but even bring you to see it.
I want to tell people that, like, you're really making a difference. It's not a joke. It's for real. A kid at the beginning of the year goes through therapy and comes out a different person. And it really, really makes a difference. It's not only Israeli kids. It's not only Stero kids, but it's kids at risk who just need this. And
right.
Really, it's the biggest thing you can do.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war, because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones. So recently, because of, the 21 months now of war since the attack on October 7th, but in the last few weeks at the beginning of the war with Iran, you also were focusing, when I contacted you, you said specific needs on families of reservists. And this is a national reality in Israel, that so many mostly young men have been, maybe not even so young in some cases, have been called up into additional months and weeks of military service in reserves, and leaving behind spouses and young children. And of course it affects a teenager, but a teenager growing up in a safe home has more skills. One of the things that you had shared, I'm looking at what you had sent me in terms of when they were shut in, you needed $32 per family for a kit for the kids who were shut in with board games and crafts and various activities. We've done that with others, and we're going to continue to. And something that's ongoing while a parent is in reserves is providing a meal, which is one, right? Someone who's listening, just imagine being home alone, not for a day, but for days on end without your spouse to be able to help.
Not only without your spouse, but your spouse is fighting in the front lines, not available on his phone, and going and fighting enemy. It's a bit scary. I could say from personal experience, I actually want to share personal. We got a call this week that my husband is called up for August. So now I think it's even more it's even more touching for me, because I know that I'm going to be going through the next few months alone with a 4-month-year-old baby.
Yep.
So I know what a help it is to get a meal, even if it's once a week or twice a week.
Right.
The biggest help, or a babysitter, or
yes, yes, we do that with my daughter and son-in-law. My son-in-law has been in reserves for much of the last 21 months, and they have 4 little boys, 6 and under. So fortunately, we live in the same community, and my wife can go over, and occasionally I go over, and you know, we're always doing what we can. But it was very, very nice. Oh, and talking about called up, when was he here? Just last week, my oldest son said he's being called up now for September, 3 days after my daughter-in-law is scheduled to give birth for their first baby. So who knows what's actually going to happen, but yeah, it's crazy. So one of the things that we did immediately, and I sent the money this week, was to provide meals. And I was glad you sent me this, talking about the need for 8,000 shekels for 100 families. So I was pleased that we were able to provide 4 times that, which could be most of a week. So I'm excited for you to be able to do that. Is there anything that you want to add to in terms of the need for reservists now in Sderot specifically, or other things that are immediate priorities?
So in terms of the families, first of all, the kids went back to structure, which is already easier for the families. And I think the biggest help is the meals. So as much as we can raise, that's what we can give the families. So again, we want to get to twice a week at least of sending a meal to families. Some of the families have 5, 6, and 7 kids.
Yeah.
It's very hard for the mother, you know, to be home alone and to be cooking all the time. We also do activities for the women all the time, about once every week or 2 weeks.
Oh.
To have them come, have a moment, you know, to breathe. We usually bring like a nice workshop just to say thank you to them for sending their husbands to fight. And the women's are heroes, not less than their husbands.
Yes.
So that's another thing.
When my son's unit first came out of Gaza in February of 24, we were asked if we could help with some things just to celebrate with them, although they had lost one of their friends in combat. And we did something in his memory. But recognizing what you just said, that the women are heroes too, they did a gathering on a Thursday night. And I made an arrangement with a florist nearby, and we had 100 bouquets of flowers for the women to take home for Shabbat. And just something, when he was in, even without me having to be told every week, I would go buy flowers for my daughter-in-law, because that's something that he wanted her to have. So all these needs, thank you for expanding upon that. I want to begin to wrap up with, I alluded to it once, and I have to admit publicly that I am embarrassed that we haven't been able to do more from Genesis 1, 2, 3, but I know it's a huge priority. There's a new building, the shell of which is complete. I didn't get to go last week to see it, but Hila, you mentioned at the beginning talking about 6 different clubs. It's different groups, and they're spread out all over the city in different places. Yeah. Some of the facilities themselves are quite on the verge of being condemned. They're really not proper structures for anything, right, much less for having children. So there's a brand new building in the center of Sderot that'll bring all of these clubs together under one roof, built as a bomb shelter, so that even if there's, God forbid, another air raid siren ever in Sderot, that the kids don't even have to move. And to me, that's remarkable. There was an initial several $100,000 budget that we have been trying to help with, to finish the building, to offer dedication opportunities, to provide furnishings for each of the clubs, which each one has its own kitchen and living room. It becomes, as we've talked about, their home. And I understood from visiting last week that you're much closer.
We're a step away, and we need the last push. The building is standing. It's there. We're just waiting for the last things that need to be there before we move the children. We're hoping in September, October, but we really hope in September the kids could already move to the new building. And we need to get the last things. We need to get the electronics for the kitchen. We're talking about fridges and microwaves and couches for every club, and outdoor furniture and games. You know, just the last things that we need to get for the new building. I'll send you obviously a list of all the things, and I hope whoever can give a hand and help in these last things so that the kids can move there. It's a much proper place for the kids to be.
Yeah.
So we really, really hope in September we'll be able to move once we get this last push of everything else we need. And yeah, we're hoping to move in there. It's a beautiful building. I'm going to send you pictures actually, hopefully this week, of the building, so that anyone who wants to see can see. The building is standing, and it has 6 different rooms, and every club has a special therapy room and a special staff room, and it's really amazing. But we just need to get the last things in there. Like, if we're talking about a therapy room, let's just say one of the rooms is an art therapy room, so we have to get all the supplies. That's extra expenses. We're talking about all the supplies for that room, at least for 1 year. It's not small expenses, but I really think we could do it. And again, it's that last push. You know, once the building is standing, we just got to get the kids in there.
Yeah, right before the war with Iran, I was literally about to make an appeal and ask people to donate a refrigerator, or as you said, a microwave.
Right. It's this and that, and it's little things, but it builds up to everything. Sure.
But people can, and you'll update me offline, where there is a room, a therapy room, an apartment, a living room, a public space that people can dedicate. and put a plaque with their names.
We have six therapy rooms that we want people to dedicate. Yeah. Six therapy rooms, six clubs.
Sure. One of the things that struck me last time I was there, and it obviously wasn't finished. It was before, I don't know when it was, but it was a while ago, maybe 2 years ago, was the bathroom. The bathroom also has a shower, because sometimes in many cases, the kids are bathing there. So they don't even have to go home and do that.
Do you want to send the kids home after they've done most of their day schedule so they could go home just to sleep?
And go to sleep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hadar, have you been in the new building?
Unfortunately, not yet. But,
from what you know, and where, I don't know which of the clubs you're in, but from what you know and know of all of the clubs, one of them is in a big public bomb shelter. One is in a kind of a ragtag room that has some concrete fixtures outside in a small yard. What's your sense from how that will enhance the day-to-day experiences of the kids?
Well, I think the kids will feel more they are at a home that's very homely, very neat, very new. The kids are very excited about it, but they know about the building and they're so excited. They want to see it. They want to go. They want the new. They want it's supposed to be a very pretty place, very, very comfortable, very new. I mean, and a lot of these clubs that we have now, like you said, they aren't very,
they're not proper for,
even though the kids love them, but, having a proper home where there's a shower, like you said, and a nice bathroom and a fully equipped kitchen and a new couch and just a whole really feels like a house. Like you have your own home where you can go, after school too. And definitely the kids will feel more, like at place and not in, and not that they feel that they're going after school to a club that's something that's very for at risk, something that's not for everyone, and it's not as proper, and it's not as neat, it's not as nice. They have something to be proud of, that they have this place that they can call home that's just as nice as any other home.
It's interesting you say that, because in Hebrew, we're using the word clubs, and that's a translation for moadon or moadoniot.
Right.
But clubs are also something that our kids go to that parents pay for, chugim, clubs, which is activities. And you just made an excellent point, Hadar, is that the kids who are going to the clubs in Sderot shouldn't feel like they're doing anything less than going to something that is special and desirable,
right,
that makes them feel special.
Sometimes even the kids, can say, I would go to their school and take them out for like an hour with me during the school day, and they would bring friends with them.
Wow.
And you could see that some of the kids, that was their moment. You know, I'm in the club and I have a bunch of kids who's taking me out and we have all these fun activities, and their friends would say, how can I sign up? How can I come too? And you could see that the kids who go to the club, there's something that they're very proud of. They're very happy about. They have something that is really cool and it's their own.
I'm trying to think of the word in English, not a miskin, not someone who's pathetic.
Exactly.
Wow. That's beautiful. I want to wrap up with open-ended questions. Is there anything in the current situation in the summer of 2025, having just been through a war that affected us all, but opened old wounds, and with everything that this group of kids that are going through and other at-risk populations in Sderot that you want to share, or anything else that we didn't talk about?
I just want to say thank you to people who are even listening to this, because just listening means a lot to us, hearing our stories, hearing us. And anyone who gives, it's again, it's life-changing. It makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you from seeing the process and seeing the kids, every single dollar makes a difference. And I'm not saying that because I just want, you know, I just want to throw that because it's really true. And again, I really hope that with your help, we'll be able to do the summer camp, to get the trips out and as many trips and activities as we can.
Yeah.
And I hope we'll be able to move into the new building this coming September. Once we get everything in there, we're ready to move into there.
Maybe when we come in October with the Root and Branch group, maybe we can do some kind of project there together. Because that's one of our commitments. When I talk about Root and Branch, it's the project to bring Christians to Harvest Olives. And we're planning on probably two groups. It's a partnership with my friend who you met, Hila Marzieh Amirizadeh, who was born in Iran and became a Christian and was arrested and sentenced to death. I remember when she was sharing her story last November.
With the kids.
Wow. It was a real impact. And one of the girls there, I actually have it here on my bookshelf. One of the girls last week was asking if she could get a copy of one of Marzi's books in English. So we'll try and do that. Maybe we can come and do something special because it's our commitment as part of Root and Branch to fund meaningful, important projects like what you're doing.
I wish that by the time you guys come, the kids will be in the new building.
God willing. Hadar, what else do you, last words, what else do we need to know that you want to impart to people who are following?
I can just say, adding to Hila, that even when the donors would come to the club and play with the kids, like you said at the beginning, that the kids remembered you and that you made some sort of a connection, the kids love it. And that connection with people from outside and seeing that there are people coming and speaking to them that care about them, you could really see that it means a lot to them. So yeah. Again, thank you for that.
Yeah, one of the beautiful images I have of many when we were there with the group last November was the Stewart kids playing foosball with your kids. And so, I mean, I don't know how much it costs to get a foosball table here in Israel, but just things like that are so critical. So, okay, Hila and Hadar, I really want to thank you for making your time, for the work that you're doing, for making me feel guilty for not doing enough. And I mean that sincerely, because we can't do enough. And I do feel that. I feel that profoundly. And I'm disappointed that I know we're doing a lot. I know that last donation, and now you're going to send pictures of how that worked out. I know it makes a difference. But, you know, I would love to come to the day where I call you up, Hila, and say, hey, I just got this new donation. What do you need? And you say, oh, no, everything's good now because you've given us so much. God willing.
God willing.
Hila and Hadar, thank you. Let me wrap up, as we always do, our conversations, offering those who are following a special opportunity. For the last, I think, 3 years, we've been doing this. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. And all we ask that you do is follow, like, or comment on the link to this. And when somebody does it somewhere once a month, we pick a person at random to receive a free book. And since almost 2 years, when we came out with our stunning coffee table book called Israel the Miracle, 75 essays by Christian leaders from all over the world writing about why Israel is so significant to them, we've been giving out a free copy of that every single month to somebody who likes, follows, or comments on this or shares the link to this program. So please do so, and maybe you'll walk away with a free copy of your book. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. Whenever you're in the area in Culpeper, please pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to our friends, the Coyne family, for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all the Genesis 123 Foundation programs, including at-risk youth, are made possible by donations. So please continue to help continue to build bridges and make conversations like this possible through your own donation. This episode is sponsored in honor of my dear, more than a friend, we call her my bonus mother, Priscilla Flory, who immediately on asking what the needs are for the kids during this wartime, made a very generous donation, which we've been able to pass along. Thank you, Priscilla, for always showing your love to all of us and all of our children. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. And we'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue, and especially questions you have about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here, where we bring you meaningful conversations about Israel and topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.